Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dr. Walter Dean, and you're in the show called Getting It Done. You know, I've often wondered what it would be like after we've gone through this health issue that we're finally find ourselves in, where everybody is supposed to come together to help each other. And I wonder what it'd be like what the soldiers experienced during the Second World War when they went over to Europe and to fight the Germans, or to the islands to fight the Japanese, hoping that they could do something to make this country a better place for all Americans to live. And when they got back here after the war had subsided, they found out that we were still back in the same place they were in before they left. That's after many of these black soldiers and individuals had given their life for this particular country. Today, my show is one where I'm discussing, not me, myself personally, but Dr. Claude Anderson is discussing America's race-based society. And I just want you to give some strong consideration to what he's talking about, as well as what I just said about what are we going to do, or are we going to be able to do anything after we come together to solve this health issue and now be faced with the reality of, after it's concluded, fighting each other once again in a divided country? Let's give a listen to this presentation.
Angela Yee, Charlamagne the Guy, we are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
Dr. Claude Anderson, welcome, sir.
Well, thank you all for inviting me. I'm glad to be here. Looks like I'm in good company.
Yeah, good morning. You know, you've been a very requested guest.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. People are always like, you got to have Dr. Claude Anderson on. You got to have Dr. Claude Anderson on for years. Yes. People have been saying that.
Well, you know why? I've been paying them well to ask you that.
is that what Powernomics is?
No, Powernomics is specifically dedicated to trying to inform black folks and trying to elevate them to a higher level of competitiveness in the society and overcome the primary legacies of slavery and centuries of Jim Crow semi-slavery in the South.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a very dangerous situation in this country's black folk, and this next year is going to be our last year to get out of it.
I thought you might say it's going to be our last year, period. I wouldn't doubt that either.
That's pretty close. you're in a very dangerous situation. After all my years in politics, in national politics, and international politics, that's why I left government, saying that somebody got to get out here and start raising Cain on behalf of black folk.
What did you do in government?
Huh?
What did you do in government?
Oh, I was Assistant Secretary of the United States Department of Commerce, the first black. I was also a chairman for economic development for governors. Also, I was only black to be appointed to be over the government's property disposal program, which means my signature alone, I can give away all kind of federal property to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was an educator for over the entire state of Florida education system for about 8 years. And so I've been around the bond for a long time, but it's finally dawned on me that somebody got to get out here and start a raising Cain on behalf of black folks.
Now, how do we catch up? You know, we're so far behind. How do we catch up, make sure that we can play in the same game or even on the same field?
Well, the first thing I have to do is go back and correct what we've never done. Mm-hmm. In all my years in national politics and international politics, but most of the people you all are very familiar with in name, they never addressed the primary problems of black folks. Our primary problem was not social integration or civil rights. The primary problem is you never corrected the legacies and burdens of slavery.
Mm.
See, the whole point of slavery was to do what? They never asked that. It was to socially engineer black folks into the lowest level of a real-life monopoly game, which means that they maldistributed almost 100% of all this nation's land, resources, rights, privileges, business, and controls of all levels of government into the hands of the dominant white society. Black folk haven't got a snowball's chance of ever being a competitive people. You might struggle and last another 2 or 3 years. It's going to wipe you out pretty soon. You came out of slavery in 1860 having one half of 1% of this nation's wealth. Here you are 150 years later. Guess what? You still own one half of 1% of the wealth. And in a nation, in a race-based society, is what you own and control that determines your equal opportunities and your rights and privileges. It has nothing darn thing to do with civil rights. That's a waste of time. Doesn't have anything to do with voting, but that's an intellectual masturbation process.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't doing any good. What you need is to own and control wealth and power.
They said intellectual masturbation. I heard you say that earlier on something I was watching. You said they get off, but it does nothing for them.
You got it down pat, bro. That's like you starving to death. Somebody give you a steak, you rub it outside your stomach. Thing is, you're just no, quit playing with black folks. When I left the president, I ran a campaign, I guess. Well, let me go back. I guess I've been very privileged in all my years. No, I'm 85 now. So I reached the peak. I don't have to get along with anybody, damn body anymore.
Man, that's a beautiful film.
You know,
yes,
that's one of the enrichments of age. But I decided after all the years of playing politics, I guess I was privileged in the sense of being the only black in the nation ever was a campaign manager, not in a campaign, but a campaign manager for governors, for presidents, for attorney generals, for state legislators, and congressmen. No other blacks had that. I felt for that reason, I had an obligation to get out here and do stuff for black folks. And so I don't play any games with black folks. I have most friends I know that you all probably have on your shows, but they're just trying to get some self-indictment elevation. I don't need it.
Now, what did you think about Kamala Harris and Cory Booker? I know you said voting is an illusion.
They're probably nice people. They're going to do it to the black folk. You say, I have yet to this day ever heard or seen not one president, not one candidate for public office ever get up and say, here's what I'm going to do for black folk. That violates the entire premise of politics. Politics is a process that decides who's going to get what benefits out of life. It's based on a very simple premise of quid pro quo. Politics, as you know it now, never existed until about the 1500s. And it says we will determine who gets what blessings, who suffers. And so, consequently, nobody's ever stood up and said, here's what black folk are going to get. You're talking about the candidates. The first thing these black folks should be asking is not what candidates you're going to represent or going to vote for. Who cares? What you should be asking is, what are you going to get? What are you voting for?
That's right. What are you going to get in exchange for your vote?
That's right. What do you get? What are you voting for? What are you going to get?
Mm-hmm.
You ain't getting a damn thing while you're voting. And see, black, and not one candidate in all the years I ran campaigns, not one candidate or one president or one party, political party, neither the Republican or the Democratic Party, Libertarian Party, Green Party, not one has ever promised that if I get the black vote, here's what I'm going to do for black folks.
It's the first year it's ever happened, and I think the only reason it's happened is because of all the hell that's being raised on social media. And, you know, like a lot of times when these presidents and candidates come up here, we ask them specifically, what is your black agenda?
You're right. And what did she say to you?
Well, I mean, they all have little things here and there. The only person I've seen have a real live black agenda is Mayor Pete. He has the Douglas plan, which is based off Frederick Douglass.
Okay, right. And see, most of them, what they're going to do is give you that old game that they used all during the formation of this country in 1789.
Mm-hmm.
And they met up in Philadelphia and said, we're gonna build this nation, and we're gonna create a document that make us the cradle of democracy. It's going to be a constitution. And we're going to make this a land of opportunity and freedom for everybody.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So they met in Philadelphia for a whole week. You know what they did for a whole week? They closed the doors and put guards on the windows in Philadelphia and said, now, we got to write this constitution. But we got a problem now. We're going to offer this as a land of opportunity for everybody. Isn't it inconsistent and hypocritical for us to be getting ready to enslave all these damn black folks we're bringing into the country? Is how are we going to get past that? We said, well, what we'll do, we'll run a game on them. They've been running that same game ever since. What we'll do in the Constitution, we use very broad and ambiguous terms. And certain terms, and certain of those broad and ambiguous terms would apply to whites, and certain apply to black folks. So the United States Constitution said, we the people, all the people, all God got a God-given right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Initially, it wasn't even happiness. It was really a property. It was black folks going to be property. And so that's what it was structured on. They said, what about black folk? And they read the Constitution. They said, what we'll do, let's use other words. Let's use cold words like those who are indebted, those who are in bondage, those who are property, those are three-fifths of a human being,
mm-hmm.
those who are equal to a field animal. And our people never figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
So you had all our civil rights leaders running around for years and running for public office like you're talking about, we got rights. You don't have any rights in the Constitution. There's no rights for blacks in the Constitution. You have the United States Constitution in 1789 was strictly the first affirmative action plan in the country, strictly and solely for whites
mm.
and those who laid on the path for whites. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
black folk are the only people in this country that can't pass for white. And now, when I left the White House with President Carter in 1970, the Office of Management and Budget says, we're going to now make everybody in here that comes into the country, we're going to start qualifying them as being white. See, up to 1970, as an example, Hispanics were always white. They were always white. But what happened in 1970, I was over education with the state of Florida at that time, and I had the dubious honor of writing the second affirmative action plan in the United States, but the first one for black folks. And I wrote the affirmative action plan approved by the governor and the state cabinet assistants. And I didn't write it for minorities and poor folks, those broad terms, and people of color, and for diversity, you know, and for gays and lesbians and midgets and humpbacks and one-eyed people. I wrote it strictly for black folks.
So listen, is there any way that blacks can correct the resource imbalance?
Yeah, you can. See, when you start playing the game, that's why my second book I wrote the first book called Black Labor, White Wealth, and which Ebony and Jet called the second Bible for black folk around the world. It sells all over Europe and into Africa. That was to show you every technique, every trick, every custom, every policy that the major white society used to lock black folk into a lowest level of a real life monopoly game, and to maldistribute all the resources. Period. Showed us that in very graphic terms. I think you got to have a copy of that bottom book over there.
Yes, sir. Black Labor, White Wealth.
That's what that was for.
We got Dirty Little Secrets. We got more Dirty Little Secrets.
Right. Okay, thank you. Now, this is what they call it around the world. They call this the second Bible for black folk.
Mm-hmm.
It shows you exactly what happened to you and that you have no rights. And it's, and power, I follow that with power numbers.
Oh, behind you.
Yeah.
There you go. Boom. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And this one's a national plan. What was the question you just asked me? I ran past it. You asked me,
how do we catch up as black folks?
How you catch up? This is a national plan for black folks. It says the national plan is to empower black Americans, period. And what you first thing you got to do is make it a long story. You got to have what you never had in this country, self-interest. You've been inculcated and coordinated and brainwashed and believing that you got some obligation and responsibility to save your world. You got to save everybody first before you save yourself. Now, I'm a pilot. I don't fly anymore. I'm too old to be flying. One of the first things I would tell people on my plane as passengers, the first thing you do, if we lose cabin pressure at 30,000 feet, we don't have any cabin pressure at night over 10,000 feet. If you lose cabin pressure, a panel over your head will fall down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When that mask falls down, the first thing you all should be doing is putting the mask on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to save everybody. Why does always got black folk marching trying to save it? We're marching for gays. We're marching for women. We're marching for poor people. We're marching for the handicapped. And yet you only control one half of 1% of wealth. You haven't got a snowball's chance. And then at the end of slavery, as I said, you had one half of 1%. Guess what? The average white person at that point in time had 3,500 times more wealth than the average black. That means that 99% of everything in this country was in the white society. And it's still in the white society. I don't care from Vermont all the way to California, San Diego. 98% of everything of value is locked in the white society. 87% of it's frozen, locked into white society. You can't get it out. So all you got to compete with is about 13% is up for grabs.
Mm.
And if black folks don't learn how to compete for that 13%, you are through. And right now, that's what's happening around the world. You see all these, we're going to implode in this country. Same thing happening in Germany with the Jews. And there's a book out called Hitler's Willing Execution to say the same thing. When certain kind of things begin to happen to you as a group, you better be very careful. And they wrote that as a big, big book and about what's going to happen. And they started exterminating the Jews. Why? Because you got a group now that you all know about called the Council of 300. What they want to do now is say, we got too many people on Earth, and we're going to start losing resources. There won't be enough resources left. We got water. We're going to have water shortages coming. And when water shortages come, what follows that is food shortages. Right now, 20% of the world is suffering from water shortages. We're going to start having water shortages in this country. We have water shortages and have food shortages. So what the council and all these rich people on earth are saying is that we got to start getting rid of some of these people. We got to start with the non-producers. Now, who are the non-producers in America? The only people in America that produces absolutely nothing except sweat is black folks.
I hear what you're saying.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, all of our people that are supposed to be successful, guess what? The only thing they produce is sweat. They're running with balls, football, basketball, baseball, tennis ball, softball, singing and dancing. Sweat. Nobody's buying any damn sweat. And how are you going to feed yourself? Right. You don't produce anything. We don't have any industry. And we had to have chairs to get industries in 1700s when the Industrial Revolution went through Europe. Black folk were slaves. When the Industrial Revolution went through America in the 1800s, we were still enslaved. We own and absolutely nothing.
You don't think that's changing now a little bit?
Yeah, no, it's getting worse. As a matter of fact, let me give you a difference. Right now, we got all these people in public office talking about we gotta eradicate poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is governed. It's a given. You cannot eradicate poverty. Why? Because just like you can't, you got an up, you got a down, you got an in, you got an out. You cannot change it. And they always got people who want to eradicate poverty. What you should be saying is leave poverty alone and go down and try to figure out how to get black folk out of poverty. Don't be trying to eradicate poverty. Leave poverty alone and get blacks out. And see, so they go, well, we need to have more equality. On a race-based society, you cannot have equality. It's impossible.
Mm.
The whole point of a race is a contest.
That's right.
See, a race, you all don't go to the Kentucky Derby and try to have all the horses being equal, do you?
No, you won't win the win.
You got it again. You're a smart man. You want to see who comes in first, second, or place.
Right.
And so, yeah, in a race-based society, why is it called a race? Race never started, never existed on the earth until the 1500s. See, and that's when it started. That's where racism comes from. They didn't pick racism just out of thin air.
It's a social construct.
It's a social construct. Yeah. It's a social construct. They thought we can start. Well, what are we going to do now that Columbus discovered America? It's 1492. We got a lot of land over there. It's pretty much vacated, vacant, and we need to go over there and try to get that land. And what they said is, well, let's go back. How are we going to do it? They said, well, let's see. Back in about 1446, we had a guy named Henry the Navigator. That went around the coast of Africa, and they picked up about 16 blacks. Africans and brought them back to Europe, gave them to the Pope in the Vatican. The folks we use is a slave.
Uh-huh.
And so the Vatican used blacks as slaves. That was one of the first ones. It's from about 1446 up to about 1488. And Pope Innocent came out and said, well, having these people as slaves, that's a good thing. And so why is that important now? Because you see, the Fox Channel be telling you all, while blacks complain about being slaves, we've always had slaves. No, you have not. You may have had slaves, but not based on skin color.
Mm-hmm.
And Pope Innocent came out and said, in the future, don't enslave anybody based on a traditional manner. You're going to enslave people for being either a prisoner of war or for personal indebtedness or religious persecution. He said, let's skip that now and save them based on skin color. That was a start. That's a trigger then in 1488. So when Columbus discovered America in 1492, he had all this land over here in that particular time.
Yeah, wonderful.
Excuse me, thank you.
Yes, sir.
At that particular time, Europe was being decimated.
Mm-hmm.
Europe was on a major problem. The entire European continent was being decimated with crime, famine, diseases. They didn't know what to do in the late 1400s and early 1500s. And all of a sudden, they said, since Pope Innocent says that we got some people we can use as slaves, and we got a
take your time, brother. Yeah, we got time.
I know you all done put me out of here in a few
minutes. No, we're good. We're good now. I've been waiting on you for years.
You tell me a tale.
No, I'm not. People been asking for you for years. We got time.
Okay, I don't want to take up all your time.
No, you good. Ain't no white man coming in here with a sign saying, oh, get him up out of here. He's talking all this shit.
So when Columbus discovered America, he had all this land, and Pope Innocent, they used these people. Let's have a new form of slavery. No longer based on religion, personal indebtedness, or prisoner of war. Let's use them skin color. And so by 1500s, then we could say use that and save America. So a race started. A race is a contest.
Mm-hmm.
That contest started between 9 European nations.
Mm-hmm.
Portugal, they all said, let's get in a contest so we can go to the Americas first and capture all that land and build wealth. That's what they came here for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you all get by that stuff about they believe in about the country, but they came here for religious persecution. Nobody came here for no damn religious persecution. They came here for happiness. Nobody get on a damn boat and sail across the Atlantic coming to America for happiness. They ain't that stupid. They came here for enrichment. Every tourist and immigrant came to America, they came here for personal enrichment. That's what they came here, to get values, resources. And they started bringing people. So all these countries were competing. to try to capture America to build it up for enrichment. And that's what happened when they got to America, later on, let me jump up. They said, well, we got all this land now. We got these people. Let's draw the Constitution. That's what I told you a few minutes ago. They met in Philadelphia, says, let's take all this land. We're going to create a document called the Constitution. That was in 1789. We're going to ratify this. And we ratified. It's going to be a social construct that the brother here just mentioned to you. The construct is that, how are we going to do that? It's well at the top. That's all the Europeans that got money want to invest in the United States. They got rich people. And that'll be the top scale. They can come here and get all the land. That's Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, all those guys, and Thomas Jefferson. They were wealthy people. They said underneath that, that's the top level. Underneath that, we set up a management class to bring in poor whites. They'd be the management class. And at the bottom, we can bring in these blacks. They had to be managed and classify them as property, as non-citizens. That way, they'll never get anything. Mm. We got them locked in box. That's in the Constitution. And that's how they got you. The first thing they did the next year in 1791, they passed the first immigration laws. Let's bring in all these poor people. This is a nation, an immigrant nation. It's basically for whites only. And black folks, you are not citizens. You have no entitlements, no rights, and no privileges, and nothing. Everything we put into the hands of the dumb white society.
Why is it expected for black wealth to drop in the future?
Oh, for a certain reason, because increasingly, they know that you don't own anything. Wealth creates wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth creates wealth. And when they talk about slavery, what blacks don't have any wealth was because they took whites captured your wealth. Labor is wealth. Labor, you can't have wealth without labor. That's the point I'm bringing to you. It's impossible to have wealth without labor. And so in the 1500s, they said, well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to all be in this race now. We're going to compete between the French, the Germans, the British, the Spain. We're going to go to America. We're going to compete to get the resources. And so they said, let's take this. So we're going to come up with a new thing called capitalism. Capitalism came out of the land and the Pope Innocent thing about slavery. He said, if you go to America, here's what you're going to do. Practice capitalism. That means owning the land, the tools, the resources, and using someone else's labor to enrich yourself. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And since black folk couldn't enrich themselves, everybody else came to the country and enriched themselves off of black folk. They took your labor from you. And then everybody became rich for it. And that's why, when slavery ended, as I said a few minutes ago, the average white person had 3,500 wealth of blacks.
So how do we catch up now? How do we make sure that we can at least catch up on the financial freedom as much as possible?
You ask yourself a good question. You should be running for office instead of Booker and
Harry. They all like you. They can do it.
You all are funny. You're right on target. No, you do it. You start in the book, like I said in my book.
Mm-hmm.
First thing two things they took from you in slavery. Two things from you that are key to get to the points you are on how you're going to solve it. One, they stripped you of your wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Your labor was your wealth. You never gained anything from it. They got it, captured it, spread it around. And that's like in resources, where it's land. Everybody coming to the country got land but you. It's a race. But they said we're going to start building wealth based on land. And George Washington, the first one, says, well, all the wealth is going to be in the land. I want 100,000 acres of free land. And then Thomas Jefferson said, well, if he's going to get 100,000 acres of free land, I want 100,000 acres of free land. And read about it in your history book. It said, give me liberty, give me death. He also said, hell, give me some land. I'm on 65,000 acres of free land. And so what the white society did while blacks were being enslaved, they gave every immigrant coming to the country, as soon as his foot hit the ground, he picked up over 750 acres of free land per immigrant.
Hmm.
Then for every slave, they only got another 150 acres of free land. And so after about 100 years, this country had given away over 2 billion. They gave away 2 billion acres of free land to immigrants. Now that's where your wealth is. In that land, not only the value of the land, but in that land, what do they have? They got timber, gold, chrome, magnesium, gold, silver, oil.
Resources. Yeah.
That's the resources. Blacks don't have any resources.
Mm-hmm.
So when you came and said, I want 40 acres of a mule, you've got to be crazy. not give you 40 acre mule. We just gave away $2 billion. We didn't give you anything. And the other Europeans came in at the same time with 1862. They gave this away. And all the newcomers, you're going to get 150. And coming from Europe, you cross it, across the Mississippi River to develop the Western countries. They gave away over 2 million acres of free land. They started the railroad lines, 11 railroad lines. They gave them 24 million acres of free land. But blacks never got any land. So what we're going to do now to play the game to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
We got to go for resources. But the two things that are hurting us, we don't have any resources because they stole that. The second thing you don't have is they stole your social cohesiveness.
You mean as far as like unity and group operation?
That's right.
Okay.
It did not allow you to play the game, to be together, come together.
Mm-hmm.
That was a threat. It's intimidating. It's intimidating during slavery. It's intimidating right now because black folks start talking about coming together.
Because from what you said, if you got 13% of
over,
maybe it seems like it's not enough for everybody.
That's right. I don't know. It's the survival of the fittest.
Mm-hmm.
Who is survival of the fittest and the strongest? And so, and here's where that's where they make the biggest mistake. They took black folk and misled the wrong way. Went into social integration rather than trying to get the resources.
Well, when Dr. King was pivoting to go get them resources, that's when they killed him.
That's right. Yeah, but that's why. Did you hear that point? Say it again.
Dr. King was pivoting from civil rights and civil liberties to go get that money. That's when they killed him. He was organizing the Poor People's Campaign.
That's right.
Yeah.
They killed him then because you know why? Because Martin Luther King, right before he got assassinated, 3 months before that, you know what he said to the country? He said, I got to admit. He said, I think I made a big mistake.
Yeah.
He said, I think I've led black folk into a burning building.
During the building. Yep.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And because he said, you cannot have social integration unless you have economic integration.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot have economic integration unless you do what? Unless you redistribute some of these resources into the hands of black folks. And that's when they killed him.
Yes, sir.
And the wing attorney loose.
What do you think of Barack Obama being president?
But Barack Obama is a joke. Barack Obama didn't do a darn thing for black folks. Matter of fact, he hurt black folks in two ways. First of all, he had 8 years to do stuff for black folks, but he carefully and judiciously avoided doing anything for black folks. And most of my white friends told me in politics, and I was always the president governor, they say, hey, we would never vote for Obama. We know black, but he's going to do something for black folks. We knew he would never do anything for black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that's the first thing. He never did anything for black folks. But he used that old thing that they did back in Philadelphia in 1789. He used very broad, ambiguous terms. I'm the president of all the people.
They like to say a rising tide lifts all boats.
That's a stupid thing.
Yeah, because a black people boat got a hole in it.
That's right. It's in the bottom of the damn lake.
Yeah.
See, but black folks, well, if a rising tide would lift all boats, if a rising tide would lift all boats, why isn't all these immigrants coming here and building industries and businesses and blacks were slaves? Why didn't they rise? Because they were excluded. Black people are outside and underneath the system. You're outside and underneath the system. And so they don't let you come together. And how they stop you from coming together? Since they wouldn't let you coalesce during slavery, they come up with this whole concept called social integration. Social integration is a divisive issue. It divides you. It doesn't pull you together. It's a weakening process. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It weakens you. If I put a cup of coffee right now in front of you and pour cream in it, do I make it stronger?
Hell no, you make it weaker.
That's right. So black folks went for social integration.
I've always asked, has integration helped to harm the black community?
Knocked black folks' brains out. Black folks had up 100 times more before social integration hit. See, I'm old enough to tell you all that. You all not old enough to know that yet.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, see, we had something. We didn't have the resources we needed, as much as we needed, but we had something. We had one of the things that's key to get to your question about where do we start. We had communities. We had communities all over America. In every city had a major community. Here, Harlem, places like that. We had our communities. We didn't have everything we wanted, but it's ours.
Yeah, you only hear about Black Wall Street. Sometimes you hear about Bronzeville in Chicago. I can't remember the town in North Carolina, but we don't hear about that. They were literally those communities all over the country.
That's right. Well, Sweet Auburn and Atlanta, Georgia, that's had all the big hotels, fine restaurants, and everything. In North Carolina, what you're talking about now, see, I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Let me use that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And we were looking for the social integration. You know why? Because we had our own businesses there. We had our own businesses. I had to be, my family was part of one, had the only black bus line in the entire United States. The only black bus line. And I said we had a bus line. I'm not talking about two or three buses. We had over 500 buses.
Wow.
In Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And guess what? We had that from 1927 up to about 1967. We had in Winston-Salem, we also had our own cab company, and our own restaurants, had our own hotels, had our own school system. And the bus line is an example. We don't kill our buses.
Sure.
Social integration. And all of a sudden, y'all started talking about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King going down to Alabama, want to integrate the bus lines. Integrate whose bus lines? White bus lines. What they want? They didn't want to own and control to get the resource. They just want to sit on the front of it.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of, you tell me, what does that indicate? Now, if you want to get on the bus, what you want to do is just want to sit on the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the bus is moving, then the back of the bus will be where the front of the bus will move in a fraction of a second. And everybody gets off at the same time. And so in Winston-Salem, we had our own buses. And so when that movement was successful in Alabama, came up to Winston-Salem. And frankly, Winston-Salem says, we want to ride on front of white buses. So we said, we don't have any white buses. They said, well, we'll get some so we can ride on in front of them.
I feel like a complete asshole because I never thought about that. Like that whole time they did the boycott, they should have been trying to establish their own bus company as opposed to wanting to ride. I never thought about that. Y'all boycotted for a year just to want to ride in the front?
See, you're a smart man.
I never thought about that.
But you got it now.
Yeah.
So you said, oh, what difference does it make for them sitting on the front or the back? You know, and our safe bus company, SAS, you can go to your computer and find out about the safe bus company and what's the sale. See, we own the buses.
Mm-hmm.
We own the resource. All of our mechanics were black. All of our drivers were black. Electricians were black. Everything was black. And so they said, well, we just want to ride on the front of their buses. We had two cab companies in Winston-Salem.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? As a resource, whites had three cab companies. And we had two cab companies. They had the Bluebird and the Yellow Cab. We had the Harris and the Camel City Cab. But guess what? When that integration movement started, you know what they wanted to do? Blacks didn't want to ride in black cabs anymore. They wanted to ride in white cabs.
Mm-hmm.
In Winston-Salem, we had our own movie theaters. We had the Lincoln and Lafayette. There was a Lincoln and Lafayette theater in every major city and every black community in America.
Mm-hmm.
And whites had three movie theaters. They had the Forsyth, Carolina, and State Theater. We didn't care. Movie theaters. And so guess what? Blacks didn't want to go to the white black theaters anymore. They want to go to the white theaters.
You swear white ice is cold.
Sure it is. Anybody not believe this, if I saw that happen once, I'll jump off what I was talking about for a second. I was in Tallahassee, Florida, giving a speech down there, and I'm sitting on the street corner talking to a real estate developer there. I'm talking to him, and I noticed across the street there's a black guy on the road there, and the guy pulled up while we were talking now. He pulled up, went over to the parking that by that grocery store, went over to the ice machine, opened up the ice container, pulled out a bag of ice, looked at the ice and rolled it around, looked at it. He put it back into the machine. And then he turned around his car, backed it up, and came right across the street where we were, to a thing called Jack's Liquor. He went and got out of his car and went into the ice machine. Same company. Same ice owned by the same company. The ice machine owned by the same company. Went in there, looked at it, and rolled around, took it, went in and bought it. And I said, I hadn't seen that before. I said, now when he comes, I'm going to ask him. I said, come here, sir. Let me ask you a question. I said, why is it that you would not buy the ice from the ice machine over there with the black grocery store, but you came over here to Jack's Liquor and bought the ice? I said, why did you buy it over here? He said, oh, I didn't want to buy Mr. Williams ice over there. He said, I don't like his ice. It's too lumpy. White ice is smoother. I said, damn.
Lord have mercy.
I knew white ice would be colder, but now I found it smoother.
Lord have mercy. Let me ask you a question. When all of that was going on in Montgomery, when they were boycotting the buses, and y'all own 500 buses, you ever say, hey, let's go down there and set up shop or, you know, send them some buses?
No. Our bus company was about, we had about a partnership of about three or four black families.
Okay.
And they were just struggling, just trying. And now they were not that sophisticated to try to interfere.
Mm-hmm.
And because blacks in those days were independent, we stayed in our own independent section. No, our bus lines were very effective. We were proud of them, proud of riding black calves. And the black folks just never learned the importance of owning control. So going back to your question again, I keep deviating. So
uh-huh.
You have to, I apologize to you.
That's all good. You
put it all together.
Yeah, we'll
put
it all together. Okay.
You know, is that you got to have, you got to own it. Get, first, you got to go after resources.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to come together first, and you got to develop a sense of this. And your sense of cohesiveness should be based around your strongest identification, cosmetic appearance, which is your skin color.
Mm-hmm.
Your greatest commonality is not what school you went to, what neighborhood you lived in, who your parents were, how much money you have. That's not your greatest commonality. Your greatest commonality is your skin color.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be saying, we got to come together as a team. Why? Because Dr. Anderson told us that racism is a team sport.
Mm-hmm.
You either play as a team or you lose by default. You got enough sense about it and play as a team on a basketball court or football court. Why don't you play as a team as a race? So we have to start playing as a team. Now, once you start learning to play as a team, what's the next thing you must get? Next thing you must get is established some turf. You must say, I must have a turf to operate on.
Land, real estate.
Land, that's right. And since they would not give you the 40 acres, you have no turf. You had a community, they stripped that. That's why in the 1950s, when you started talking about social integration, they came up with a concept called black removal. They used the 1956 Highway Act to drive an expressway through every black community in America and destroy it. You want to find the old black communities in America? Go find the expressway.
Mm.
It went right through it.
Mm.
And so that ran black folks. And so white, why? Because white folks could be ahead in that. And get in that on the expressway and get to a new thing they built called suburbs. We never had suburbs before. But the suburbs came out of the fact that whites wanted to get away from blacks and blacks wanted to socially integrate. And so the whites, we abandoned these black folks and moved to the suburbs and take all of the what with us?
Resources.
Mm-hmm. We'll take all the industries, the factories, the automobile dealerships, the banks, the culture, the money, the wealth, the power, and relocate it in the suburbs. And we'll strip these urban areas. So these black folks, they come in, they can't run an urban city. You can't run Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, Philadelphia. You can't run it because you won't be in the resources available to you. And so when the white folks say, you all were smart enough to run a city, they say, that's y'all just let the city run down. No, they ran it down for you. They use a policy called burnt field, scorched earth policy.
Mm.
If we leave here, we're taking everything out.
And the only resources that they'll have is with the drugs that we put in.
That's right.
The guns that we put here.
That's right.
Yeah, so they will have to resort to crime and violence as well.
You're a smart man again.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? See, what most of our civil rights leaders don't understand, our elected officials don't understand, is only three things that a black person, only three things. You need to have a business up here, a job at the top. If you don't have that, you go down to the second level. Second level, you go on some kind of social services, food stamps, welfare, public housing. You don't have that. Then you must go to the last level, which is commit crime.
Mm.
And so a black person must have a combination, sophistication, or elaboration of three things. A job, business, going on to crime. And when they did that, they divide that up. White crime would be called civil crime. Black crime would be called blue-collar crime. Blue-collar crime, you go to jail. White-collar crime, you go into the criminal courts.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the conversation that they're having about reparations now?
Well, I've spent about 60 years. That's what books for. Most of that dialogue is being generated by my books.
Mm-hmm.
And but unfortunately, most of the people down there trying to latch on to the reparation movement don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If Johnny come lately, a plane jumper. They want to jump in on the movement just to get their name in the paper. They don't have a plan about what they're going to do for reparations. But black folk entitled reparations. You have a chance to get some of it. Let me go back in history again. See, I told you in the first, you got two, most people don't know this, but you got two constitutions.
Mm-hmm.
You got the first constitution in 1789. That's the 1 through 12 amendment. And those amendments gave whites everything they needed. That's why white folks didn't have all these, they didn't have any big demands other than what was in the constitution. So from 1789 up to 1860, the first constitution was in effect. Amendment 1 through 12. But what happened after that was that in 1857, you had a black man went to court called Dred Scott. You remember that?
Yes.
Trying to get some freedom based on the fact he moved across state lines out of the South He thought he would be free. He went to court. The finally Supreme Court ruled against him and said, no, you got out free. Why he said, why? And it's basically because in this country, because you're considered to be property. Your property in the Constitution, your citizen, you're not non-citizen in the Constitution, you have no rights. You have no rights. So therefore, a black person has no rights that a white person is bound to respect. And that was in 1857. So when the Civil War was over, after the Civil War was over, what they wanted to do, you had some white Republicans, liberals, saying we got to go back and give black folks something. You got to give them something. And so they said, we're going to start a second constitution. The 13th, 14th, and the 15th Amendment and the Civil Rights Laws constitute a second constitution in the United States. 99.5% of all the people in America don't understand that.
Mm.
Don't understand you got two constitutions. The first constitution was the one 1789 all the way up to the Amendments 1 through 12, 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. That was written strictly and solely for black folks. But I've never had any black folk yet. Harris and the Booker that run of office, they don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be fighting, saying, we got two constitutions. If I get elected to public office, I'm going to go back to that second constitution and try to get those things that were set aside for black folks. And what was that? The radical Republicans said that in 1860 in the United States Congress, that in this nation, black folk can either be one or two things. You're going to be slaves or you're going to be free. To be free in America as black people, you must minimally have 40 acres and a mule. That's what and $100. That's where that saying came from. You must have 40 acres, a mule, and $100. And but what happened after that was said, then you had the guardians of racism kill it. The United States Supreme Court is a guardian of racism. The Supreme Court is my primary purpose is to make sure nothing changes racial issues in America. That's why the United States Supreme Court has never, never, never ruled effectively to the benefit of black folk. And so as soon as they enacted the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment, and the Civil Rights Law. And that Civil Rights Law says that black folk must have certain benefits. They said about freedmen, banks, and everything else. But the United States Constitution came in and killed it. Supreme Court came in and killed it. You ever heard of what's called period of Reconstruction? You know, Reconstruction Law?
Uh-uh.
Between 1865, there was a 10-year period between 1865 and 1875. It was called Reconstruction. Now, what I tell black folk is that you should be saying, why did they call it Reconstruction? It was Reconstruct. What do you mean by Reconstruct? The first Constitution was a social construct that locked you into the bottom barrel permanently. Reconstruction that took place between 1865 and 1875 says redo the thing, give black folk a chance. And it's sort of going on forever. But the United States Supreme Court jumped in and killed it in 1875. It only lasted 10 years. They came in and said, no, we're not going to give black folk any free with no land, no rights, no privileges, no tools, no animals, no house, no home, no organization, no education, no animals, nothing. And tell them to root, haul, or die.
Mm.
And that's why Trump right now is stacking your courts with conservative Supreme Court justice.
Over 160.
That's right.
People haven't even realized that yet.
What, I'm sorry, say it again?
I said, people haven't even realized it. 160 lifetime federal judges. He's appointed.
That's right.
Some of the most racist, bigoted bastards you ever gonna meet.
Right. But that's right. See, what they don't understand in the Supreme Court, the first 87, the first 57 Supreme Court justices were slave owners. Did you know that?
No, sir.
You got it now, brother. First 57 were slave owners. And the other 6 or 7, about another 6 or 7, have been white racists. That's why right now you got a Supreme Court sitting there with 9 people on it. What they're telling you is that justice in America for black folk can only be seen through the eyes of whites.
Mm.
You can't see it otherwise. That's why you got 9 people on the Supreme Court. You got 9 people. You got 9 whites there, one pretending he's trying to be black.
Clarence Thomas.
But none of them take up any issues for black folk. Let's go to the lower level, the federal courts. I know I'm running past my time.
No, you go ahead, brother. Okay. You good?
Let's go to the federal courts. Since Trump has been in office, he's put in about 47 federal judges.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
No, more than that.
Is he on that? How many is he
on? 160.
Okay, I don't know where I've been keeping track. Now, think about that. Between, I've been giving you all a lot of dates.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution, 1789, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Up from 1789 all the way up to 1948. The United States, they don't have how many federal judges they appointed during that period?
Mm-hmm.
1,400 federal judges between 1789 and 1948. Why did I say 1948? That was the first time they appointed a black to a federal judgeship. All the federal judges were whites. Now, 1948. Now, between 1948 and up to about 1980 is the latest point. At that point, they put in about another 30. They put in 30 black judges. Now, when I'm in the White House with President Carter, and at that time, Strom Thurmond was over the Judiciary Committee for the Republican Party.
Now, that's a cracker. That's a cracker ass cracker. I'm from South Carolina. So
that's
right. Yes,
South Carolina.
Don't get no work in.
And that's why I was born in South Carolina. So he comes up to me, and I told you a few minutes ago, I was over the Property Disposal Program. I had full authorization. I'm the only black in the history of the nation that had full authorization to give away federal property as a black man. All it did was my signature. I had 45 people on my staff down in Charleston, South Carolina. I could send them out whatever they want. Strom Thurmond came to me and said, Dr. Anderson, I need some things in South Carolina. I said, what do you want? He said, I need some couple of bulldozers. I need about 10 or 20 Quonset huts, some other things down there. And he said, can you help me? I said, sure, I can help you. I can take care of that. I said, by the same token, I'm the only black up here. Since I'm the chairman for economic development, and I'm assistant secretary in commerce, and I'm over this program, you and I got to have a little quid pro quo. He said, what do you need? I said, I want some black federal judges. He said, what are you telling me what you got? And I get it for you. I said, I want three, at least three right now. I want them as black federal judges. I said, I'm going to put Al C. Hastings out of Broward County. I want him to be a federal judge. I said, I want Judge Joe Hatchett out of Jacksonville, Florida. I want him to be a federal judge. Another black guy out of San Diego. I want him to be a federal judge. And so Strom Thurmond said, you got it. Now, here's the irony there. Now, they appointed from 1948 up to that point in time, you've had about 30 black federal judges. How is it that Claude Anderson can get three federal judges? You have 46 million black folks, they couldn't get a damn thing. they're in politics. So, see what I'm saying? Civil rights leaders.
They're not asking.
See, that's my point. They don't demand a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, going back to your question, you have never had anything you started demanding. And the first thing you should be demanding is what they didn't do during the civil rights movement. They should have gone back in the 1960s instead of talking about social integration.
And money.
Thank you.
Economic empowerment.
And economics.
That's right.
You should have said, hold it. And I told them that time, they're going to have a big march in Detroit, Michigan, down Woodward from Jefferson Avenue down to Wayne State University. And they're going to march down there. And Martin Luther King was leading that. And Malcolm X was there, too. That time, I was opposed to it. I said, what are you trying to do? Well, we want to go out here and integrate the suburbs. I said, we're 51% of the population in Detroit. Why do you want to go out to the white suburbs? Let them go out there and stay out there. No, that's not right. We got to integrate it. And so we have a march. The person they talked to was Malcolm X. They said, and the newspaper says, Malcolm, what do you think about this march down Woodward? From Jefferson down to Wayne State University to integrate suburbs. And Martin Luther King, Malcolm says, what march? He said, that march down for the coming down. He said, that's not a march. So the newspaper said, what is it? He said, that's a damn parade. He said, like any parade, you got a bunch of clowns out front leading it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no. And said, don't integrate. Don't integrate these communities. Leave black folk intact. That's why no Arabs, no Asians, no Hispanics, no Asians, nobody's coming to America trying to socially integrate with black folks.
That's always been there in a wide way, though. The Nation of Islam always is like, let's build our own.
Thank you.
For self.
Yeah. But see, black folks, I just got to be with somebody else. And see, and the conclusion of this is that I got to get your point. I got to go back to this.
That's right.
I keep leaving it. First, you build these communities.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we do not have not one single black community in America. Not one. It's impossible for you to play as a community. Means you got a team. You've got mutual understandings, interests, and directions and plans. You don't have. You have not one black community in America. All you got are black neighborhoods. A neighborhood is where you eat and sleep. A hotel is a neighborhood. A neighborhood is like having a bucket with holes in it. You pour in water and it runs out. It has no effect. And some of these neighborhoods have gotten so bad now, they're not even neighborhoods anymore. crime has gotten so high, they ran the neighbor out. All you got left is the hood.
That's right.
That's why they call it the hood. Nothing left in there. They don't have any communities. They have a community, you must have three elements to be, make a community, qualify as a community. You must have a wholly independent economic structure that can produce jobs, services, goods, products, and resources for your own people. Two, the second thing you must have in there, you must have a code of conduct saying this is how we're going to behave. Here's how we're going to love and support each other. Here's how I'm going to get along. Here's why when I go to the Breakfast Club, I'm going to love and respect those blacks on there, appreciate them, care about them, protect them. And lastly, you must have politicians elected to office who will represent you first and foremost. You don't put black folk in public office that will look out for everybody else before they look out for you. If you don't have those three things, you don't have a community. Or you got a neighborhood. And that's what we got in this country. We know neighborhoods. And once you get that neighborhood, then you go to Anderson's third, go to Anderson's five-story building. And that's how you get your wealth and power to go back to my friend's name. What's the
Charlemagne.
Name? Charlemagne. Yes, quite Charlemagne's initial question. Now, you got to go back in that community and do what I told you in my books. You must build a five-story building. Once you get a community, that's your platform. That's your baseline. It's because you got turf, territory. It's like building a house. Now you got something situated on. You can't build a house with nothing. You got to have, it has to be structured on something. And once you've got that foundation, that community, now the first thing you work on is economics. You start practicing group economics in a vertical order. Practice group economics, make your money bounce in your own community 8 to 12 times before it leaves. Spend your money with your own people first. Buy from your own people first. That's, so you get an economy going in your community. Buying your own people's products, services, goods, like you do in Chinatown, any other town, Mexican town. And once you get that economy going, then you get the profits coming, the resources, the money coming in from your economy, then you go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. Our people got that backwards. They want to get into politics before they get in the economy. Backwards as hell. You won't make it. Mm-hmm. And you got to, politics is the second floor. I learned that before I ran campaigns and I've been office with two presidents, okay? It won't work. You get politics at the second floor. And don't worry about voting. Voting is immaterial. Voting is a game. It's a form of entertainment. So when you get to the second floor, you take the money that you get from the first floor and you buy the second floor. You buy every politician. You buy every politician with the money you made on the first floor.
So should we vote at all?
I'll tell you that in 1 second. Okay. If you haven't got enough money to buy them, then you rent or lease them, okay? So you get what you want. Make them do what you want to do. And then you make those politicians then go to the third floor. The third floor is your political, it is your court system, your police system.
Mm-hmm.
And make those politicians on the second floor control the politicians who quit shooting black kids on the street and mistreating them, cat and beating black folk. You control the court system, so they won't be getting them 40 years in jail for hair marijuana and all that kind of stuff. You got it. So your second floor controls your third floor. Your court controls your judges and stuff, as I'm talking about with Trump and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fourth floor, what you get into is media. You take your money off the first floor and you buy media. You got about 12,000 radio stations in the United States. Black, out of that 12,000, black folks that own a major portion, at least 15% of them. You got 12,000 cable systems. Blacks don't own it, basically none of them own it. You have 5,000 daily newspapers. They don't own a damn daily newspaper. You got 5,000 TV stations. Blacks might own one someplace too, the best. You don't own. In other words, black folk own 0.0005% in media.
Mm-hmm.
You don't own media, you can't communicate, you can't organize, you can't motivate. And so you got it. So that's the structure. If you want to play, if you want to build your wealth and power, that's how you do it. And once you build that economy, spend your money with your own people. Make it bounce 8 to 10 times. In this country right now, Hispanics. Hispanics bounce their money on an average of 6 to 7 times in Mexican time, little Nevada, little Cuba. White folks typically bounce their money 8 to 12 times. Arabs and Asians bounce their money about 13 or 14 times. Jews bounce their money about 18 times. Black money doesn't bounce once.
Mm.
As soon as a black person gets paid, he runs straight to somebody else's business and gives them the money. That means they go bankrupt every night. Every black neighborhood goes bankrupt every night at 7 o'clock. Stays bankrupt until the next morning. They don't own their damn businesses. When the white man or somebody else closes the doors, they go bankrupt. But well, we overcome it. We're progressing. Wait, where's the progress? Oh, someplace. Well, we got social progress. Let me jump back to that a second. I was born in South Carolina. Let me show you how they got off track. I still got time, bro.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to South Carolina. South Carolina, Clinton, South Carolina, way back in 1948. They filed a lawsuit. You know why? Against the county and the state. Because they were not appropriating the resources in McClinton, South Carolina, in Strong Thurmond's territory. They weren't appropriating anything. And so for the average black kid, they put in $1.50 for a black child to go to school on an average. A white kid, they were getting $12, $13 to go to school. And so there was a misappropriation, maldistribution of the money just to go to school. Black kids get $1.50, white kids get $12 or $13.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing. White kids are riding to school on buses. Black kids walk in snow, mud, rain, anything, bushes to get to school. Black teachers get something like $6 or $7 a week paycheck. White kids, teachers getting something like $25 or $30 for a day getting paid. Everybody, and we went to school, guess what? All the best materials. A black child got to school in McClinton, South Carolina. He spent the first week of school with big art gun erasers cleaning up the books and materials because whites sent all the old used materials over to the black schools. And then you had to spend your whole day, whole first week taping up the pages in the book, cleaning them up, wiping them down, getting all the trash off of them, the gun, the food, and everything else. We got the hand-me-downs. White kids got all the new equipment. When we went to school, we walked past the white schools. Guess what? White schools had tennis courts. You know what the black schools had? They had two poles or a piece of wire between it for tennis courts. White schools had swimming pools. We didn't know what we did. We had to go down and dam up the creeks. We swam in the creeks by damming up the creeks and swimming in. We had swimming holes. White kids got everything. So what the Clinton, South Carolina parents, black parents are saying is that we want equal resources. We want resources. That's why I focus on this as a forensic historian. We wanted resources. We don't give a damn about anything else. That lawsuit was filed about 1948. It bounced around and finally got to the Supreme Court by 1953 and 54. At that point in time, the Supreme Court, here comes the NAACP. And what they wanted to do there was to say, well, let's have social integration rather than redistribution of the resources. And that way, we don't want anything black anymore. Let's get rid of all the black schools. Let's get rid of everything black. And so that's how the social integration replaced. What black folk wanted was desegregation. Stop using government to mistreat us and hurt us and maldistribute the wealth.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the clock on the wall says that this particular program is going to have to come to some kind of conclusion. Although we've had a pretty good lesson on some historical aspects from Dr. Cloyd Anderson, who at that particular time was 85 years old and had seen a lot in terms of the difference between segregation and desegregation. He explains in such a way that makes most believe or should believe that black people had it better when they were separate and unequal. And I'm here to tell you that they did not have it. I don't disagree with some of the things that he has said, but I do just disagree with the society of black people being by themselves and having things that are what white people have separate from the white people. I think that there was a purpose for us integrating, which Dr. Anderson alludes. And that was multiculturalism, as opposed to a house divided will fail and fall apart. And in the United States, in order for it to be successful, had to come up with some way to try to have a united situation, unlike what we presently have. I hope and pray that those particular people involved with this various medicine upon us right now are able to get well. And you are listening to and have been listening to Getting It Done with your host, Dr. Walter Dean. Have a good day.